On July 4th, 1976, Israeli special forces made a daring raid in Uganda. They rescued 103 Jewish hostages held at an airport in Entebbe. In less than 15 minutes, the soldiers killed all seven kidnappers and set the captives free. The way they did that was, as the commandos entered the terminal, they shouted a Hebrew word that meant, "Get down." And the Jewish hostages there all understood that Hebrew word and immediately fell on the floor. The kidnappers, who did not speak Hebrew, remained upright, and the rescuers shot them dead. 103 people walked out of that terrifying situation alive because they understood what was being said. Mark's gospel is all about Jesus, the one who came to earth on a daring rescue to free captives held hostage in sin by the evil one. But turns out, in order to benefit from Jesus' heroic action, we must, like those Jewish people at the airport, understand and act on what Jesus says. So in today's text, Mark chapter 13, there are some things that we need to heed. This is called the Olivet Discourse, because it's what Jesus taught the 12 about what was coming as they sat on the Mount of Olives, and they looked across the valley at the temple in Jerusalem. And I will tell you up front that this chapter is not easy. There are many ways of understanding all of these words. Augustine, an early Christian preacher, said, and I quote, "I admit the meaning of this passage completely escapes me. But fools rush in where wise theologians fear to tread, so what say we give it a shot?" We are going to look today at predictive prophecy, eschatological events, things having to do with the last days, end times stuff. When I was talking with my son on the phone about preaching such things, I said, "Jess, I'm going to lose some friends this week." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I'm going to talk about the rapture." And Jess said, "Oh, that's not good." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because you're going to lose some friends." And I said, "I know." And he said, "Dad, you don't have that many to spare." But let's look at what Mark tells us that Jesus says and see if we can't find some things in this chapter that we can all agree are very important. So here in Mark's gospel, it's the last week of Jesus' life, and for a while he's been insisting that he's going to be killed, and his guys cannot figure that out. They don't like it. They don't understand it. How can the Messiah die? But when they enter Jerusalem on Sunday, Jesus gets a hero's welcome. It's called the triumphal entry, and Jesus' guys think maybe things are turning around. On Monday, Jesus interrupts again. On Monday, Jesus interrupts the money-making wrongness that's going on in the temple. If we blow up, I apologize. I'm very sorry for... Is there anything I can do differently? Can we turn something off? It sounds like right there. But it might be all of them. That's good. On Sunday we had the triumph entry. On Monday, Jesus interrupts the money-making wrongness that's going on in the temple, and the people cheer for him, and the disciples' hopes continue to rise. We're having a good week. Tuesday is the great day of questions, when his enemies took their best shots at publicly embarrassing Jesus, trying to trip him up with the trickiest conundrums, but he walked away Tuesday unscathed. And again, the guys with Jesus think, yes, that's another win for our side. And as they leave town that Tuesday night, there's a spring in the step of the disciples. They've had three good days in a row. Mark chapter 13, verse 1 says, "As Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, 'Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings.'" The temple back then was atop Jerusalem's highest hill. Solomon's first temple had been destroyed 600 years before. They had been rebuilding the temple ever since, and Herod had recently added some beautiful upgrades. One of the walls of the temple was now gold-plated. The other walls had pure white stone, so that when you looked at it, it either looked like the sun was reflecting off of it, or it looked like snow. Titus, the Roman general who would eventually knock all of Jerusalem down in 70 AD, said, "Whoever has not seen Herod's building has not seen a beautiful building in his life." It was considered one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, the temple was. And why not, Jews thought, since God lives there? The temple represented everything good in life to them. And as Jesus' guys look back with a warm feeling in their heart, they say, wow, such a beautiful view. One of them said, God is good. And the other guy said, all the time, God is good. They were so happy. Verse 2 says, but Jesus replied, do you see all these great buildings? Not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. Talk about Debbie Downer. They are oohing and aahing about the temple. And Jesus says, one day it's going to be a pile of rubble. And like probably happened a lot with the 12, when Jesus spoke, they were all confused and they got real quiet because they didn't know what to say. Later, verse 3 says, as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, tell us, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign that they are all about to be fulfilled? So here's the problem. When Jesus says this temple is coming down, those guys heard, it's the end of the world. Because in their minds, those two things are synonymous. They think God kind of depends on his temple. And if the temple goes, God will probably go too. They think if they lose the temple, there's no hope left in life. It's mostly over, they think. So when Jesus says the temple is going to be torn down stone by stone, in their minds, that is the end of the world. And they say, as is their what? Want. When Jesus says his crazy thing, they say, wait, what? Did you hear about the little boy who was putting on his shoes one day? He was just learning how to do that. And he'd really worked hard that day, and he'd got them on, and he came to show his mom. He was so proud, and his mom said, oh, Billy, you've got your shoes on the wrong feet. And Billy looked down for a moment, and then he looked up. He said, Mom, you can't trick me. I know these are my feet. Looking at the temple, Jesus said, this building's coming down. And they looked at it, and they said, Jesus, you can't trick us. That would mean the end. And Jesus said, no, that's a totally different event. But since you brought it up, I will tell you about both. The disciples asked Jesus for some details, which he provides because he wants them to be ready for both things, for the destruction of the Jerusalem temple and the coming of the Son of Man in power and glory. First, he talked about the temple. In Mark chapter 13, verses 5 through 23, Jesus says, okay, guys, life is going to be really challenging, like it's always been. Here's what Jesus says to his guys about the temple's upcoming collapse. Jesus said in verse 5, watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name claiming I am he and will deceive many. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Jesus said, nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places and famines. These are the beginning of birth pains. Jesus says, that's all normal stuff. Don't worry. Sometimes today people talk about things that are signs of the end, like those things. But Jesus said, don't be fooled. All those things are always happening. That's normal life in this world. Don't panic. Jesus says, do not panic until you see the terrible thing that Daniel predicted. And Jesus calls it the abomination that causes desolation. Jesus says, when you see that thing standing where it shouldn't be, like Daniel said it would be, Jesus said, when you see that right then at that moment, run. As fast as you can, run. Get out of town, run. Do not pack a suitcase, do not pack a lunch. Run immediately, as far as you can. When you see the abomination that causes desolation, pray that it's not winter because you get stuck in the snow. Pray that you're not pregnant because pregnant ladies can't run fast. And Jesus says, if you don't run, you will get slaughtered, like dead slaughtered. So when you see that thing happen, run. The abomination that causes desolation, the Jews knew that that was Old Testament code from Daniel for foreigners in God's temple. Jesus said, when you see that thing happening, run for the mountains, run like crazy, run. So here's what happened 40 years later. Jesus said that 40 years later, Rome's army shows up and besieges Jerusalem, starving all the people inside town to death. Then the Roman army marched in over the dead bodies and killed everybody who wasn't already dead. And for fun, they set the whole city on fire, which was not smart on their part because the temple's gold-plated wall in the fire melted, and the gold ran down in the cracks of the wall, and the Roman soldiers had to tear their walls apart brick by brick to get all the melted gold. And in the end of all of that, not one stone of the temple stood upon another, just like Jesus had predicted. Another really interesting part of that story goes like this. Jewish historian Eusebius later chronicled that right before the Roman general Titus closed off the city, before he besieged the city, the Jerusalem leaders invited Gentile allies to come help them plan a defense. And the Jerusalem leaders took their Gentile allies into the temple to meet. And when Christians in Jerusalem saw the Gentiles being escorted into the temple, they remembered Jesus' words and they ran. They left Jerusalem, they fled to a city towards the mountains called Pella. As fast as they could, they ran, and those who ran survived, and those who didn't, didn't. Jesus had warned people about the yet-to-come destruction of the temple, and those who heeded his words about that, like those who obeyed when the commandos in Entebbe yelled, "Get down," those people lived. So summarizing this historic event, Jesus told them exactly what was coming and exactly what to do, and those who understood him and acted on his words lived. That will matter in here in a minute. By the way, do you know why crows always travel in pairs? Crows, because while one crow is dining on roadkill, the other crow will sit in a nearby tree warning of oncoming traffic. You've heard crows. They give warnings of approaching vehicles. They say, caw, caw, caw. And the reason we're spending so much time today on a history lesson regarding the sacking of the temple in Jerusalem in 70 AD is I just want you to see that when Jesus says something is going to happen, no matter how unlikely that seems, it always happens just as he says it will. And safety is found in obedience. In fact, everything Jesus has ever said has come true. Every time his prediction has come exactly true, except for one thing. There's one thing that Jesus said would happen that has not yet happened. In Mark chapter 13, verse 24, Jesus says, "But in those days, following that distress, following the temple thing, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time," Jesus says, "people will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory, and he will send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens." So here Jesus says, after the temple is destroyed, at some point after that happens, men will actually see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. The sun is going to go dark, the moon and the stars will be extinguished, everything will be rocked. But here's the thing, Jesus is not saying those are signs of the end, get ready. He's saying that's the end. He is quoting from one of his favorite Old Testament books, Isaiah, who said, "When God arrives in judgment on this planet, all nature will go berserk. As it's happening, everything that normally happens will come to a screeching halt." See, the events everybody talks about today, signifying the end of the world, natural disasters all over the place, political crises, societal disturbances, persecution. Jesus said all that stuff is going to happen before the temple falls. All that stuff, Jesus says, that we consider eschatological in significance, Jesus says that's just normal life. That just happens. But once the temple falls, Jesus says, after that, then will come the end. Linda bought me a popcorn maker. My wife knows that I like popcorn made in boiling oil. And the microwave stuff just wasn't doing it for me. And she got tired of making it for me on the stove every night, cooking up. So she bought me something cool. It only uses 1 tablespoon of oil, and it only takes 4 minutes. And it's so simple to use, she said, even I could do it. It's like cooking that I could do. And the cool part of this thing is, you have to wait until the last kernel pops before you unplug it. As long as you hear stuff, it's not done. But when you hear nothing, you know it's ready. And sure enough, now when I hear the popcorn stop popping, I know it is just a matter of time until I will be enjoying a big bowl of delicious popcorn that Linda will come in and deliver to me on the couch. What? Jesus told them, you're going to hear lots of stuff popping as you follow me in life. Disasters, crises, disturbances, persecution. As long as you hear that stuff, you're not done. However, once the temple goes silent, it is just a matter of time till I come back. Jesus said, first the temple gets destroyed, after that, the Son of Man will judge the world. So rather than give his guys the signs of the end of time, Jesus here just describes the end. Like, that's all, folks, closing time. And the only timing clue Jesus gives us is after the temple falls. Jesus says, here is the heavenly schedule. Normal, messed up life. The temple will be destroyed. I will return. Mark well this piece of Mark. On page 13, Jesus says, I will be back. You will see me, guaranteed. Billy Graham was on Johnny Carson once, and Johnny Carson said, you know, Billy, I think if Jesus came back today, we'd probably do him in again. And Mr. Graham leaned forward in his chair and he said, Johnny, he is going to come back, but we're not going to do him in. He said, the first time he came in humility, the next time he's coming in power. He said, the first time he came to die, the next time he's coming to judge. And I'm telling you, it's going to happen. As sure as you're sitting there looking at me, one day you will be looking at him. Jesus said, you guys know that when the fig tree produces leaves, summer's right around the corner, right? In the same way, watch the temple and listen for its silence. The end is going to be after that. But that didn't really answer their question. They wanted times and dates like we do. They wanted to know July 31st, 2021 is going to be the day. So Jesus addresses that desire on their part directly in Mark chapter 13, verses 32 through 36, where Jesus says, oh, about the time. But about that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Be on guard. Be alert. You don't know when that time will come. It's like a man going away. He leaves his house. He puts his servants in charge, each with their assigned task, and he tells one of them to keep watch at the door. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. Jesus says, what I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. He's coming back. We don't know when. I like the card that you can buy at Christian bookstores. On the outside of the card, it says, advice to those thinking about deciding about Jesus. And you open it up, and on the inside, there's only one word. It says, hurry. Jesus doesn't mean watch, sit around, look for signs that it's almost time that he's coming back. He means get busy. Do your stuff. When the temple's gone, there's only one more thing on my calendar. When he's asked for a cosmic timeline from AD 30 to the very end of all things, Jesus goes, okay, first the temple's going to be crushed. The next thing will be the end. Some people say, well, John, it's been 2,000 years. Nothing's happened yet. Maybe Jesus was wrong, which is why we spent a lot of time on his prophecy about the temple's destruction. Jesus predicted in 30 AD that the temple would be destroyed. And in 70 AD, people are saying, you know, it's been 40 years and nothing happened. Probably Jesus was wrong. But as they were saying that, Rome was marching on Jerusalem, and the very next day, it turns out Jesus was right. For people betting against Jesus coming back, so far so good. But what Jesus says always happens every time. So pushing all your chips to the middle of the table on this one is a good call. But wait, Walker, wait. What about that idea that a whole bunch of things still have to occur before Jesus comes back? What about the rapture where Jesus is going to come back and Christians get caught up and taken away? By the way, here's where I usually start losing friends. The rapture, leaving only people on the earth who don't believe in Jesus. All the stuff that we have is left behind, like driverless cars and empty houses and all our clothes just laying there in a pile, a world with no Christians. Can you imagine if all the Christians were sucked off of the earth up into heaven this week? And next Sunday, there are only like four of you who show up here for the assembly. I mean, that'd be more Panera for you, so that's kind of a good thing, but not really. So after the rapture, Jews start turning back to God, and they choose to follow Jesus, and the man of lawlessness has to show up, and he attacks the new Christians who are called tribulation saints, and there's a battle at Gog and Magog, and then there's a valley in the battle in the valley of Megiddo, and then Jesus will bring back all the saints from heaven and rebuild the temple in Jerusalem with blocks that have already been cut and are hidden in Walmarts in Illinois and Indiana right now. No, that's what people are saying. They got the blocks already cut, and they're just waiting for him to come back so they can ship them over and he can build the temple again. And Jesus will rule from Jerusalem for 1,000 years or something like that. There are as many variations of all those events as there are people talking about all those events, which doesn't mean that one of them isn't right. But for sure, they're not all right, because they are all very different. And it is possible that none of them are even close to right. And I say that because from the time Jesus said what was going to happen in AD 30 until AD 1830, Christians everywhere agreed that the only thing left on God's calendar, the only thing left on God's to-do list, was sending Jesus in judgment. That was it. That's all anybody expected as the next and last event. Now, does Paul say that Jesus will come from heaven and those who love him will be caught up and meet him in the air? Absolutely. He says that in 1 Thessalonians 4. But the way all Christians understood that for 1,800 years was that that was that. When we're caught up in the air, that's the end. That's judgment. That's heaven and hell. And on we go to our blessed hope, because that's the final buzzer. That's the very last call. But a lady in Scotland in 1830 had a vision, and a preacher friend of hers went with it, and the idea that he presented migrated over to America, and eventually it got turned into a 16-book series by Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye that's fun to read. Now, anyone who does not subscribe to the rapture as pure biblical truth is considered unlearned and out of step, and even though nobody thought that for the first 1,800 years of the church, that's what we're supposed to think. Here's my biggest problem I have with rapture theology. By the way, I wrote a paper in seminary once that said, in case of the rapture, the message in Mark 13 is that we should be ready now. He said, after the temple goes, nobody knows when, not even him, but he's coming and we need to be ready, constantly, always ready. We should live ready. The rapture and all that other stuff that they list coming after it, it obviously means that the end is not yet, because there are so many more things that have to happen. So why do I need to be ready today if I know I've got lots more time? But if the very next thing that's going to happen is the last thing that's going to happen ever, if that's the situation, in that case, then we know people need to get right with him right now. I am keenly aware that almost every preacher on Christian radio and every book in Christian bookstores has brought the rapture out in, of the world and 7 years of bad stuff thereafter and the millennium, all that stuff. I know that that's what they all teach, but folks, my study of scripture leads me to conclude that the only thing left on Jesus' list is to show up and announce, this is the end of the world as you know it. The temple's destruction was our warning. That was Jesus yelling, get down. Now we await the return of the one whose temple it was. And if you see that differently, if you're a big fan of the rapture, that's okay. We can agree to disagree. You see it your way, I'll see it God's. And one day we'll see who's right. But here are two things I think that we need to work on today from Mark chapter 13, no matter what you think about that. Number one, sometimes followers of Jesus place more trust in gifts than the giver of the gifts. Sometimes followers of Jesus place more trust in the gifts God gives us than the giver of the gifts. Jesus's guys thought that the temple was almost more important than the one who lived there. They thought if the temple gets destroyed, God must have lost control. And lately, I have had lots of conversations where Christians are talking about where we are as a nation. Like, we're not back in the 60s before we took God out of school and everything. We're not back in the 90s before everything was 9/11. We're not even back in the 2019 before everything was COVID-19. We have to wear masks. We have to Zoom school. We have to shove Q-tips into our brains. We can't eat potlucks together, which in my mind proves there's always a silver lining to whatever you're going through. But really, racial animosity like never before, migrant influx like never before, the Supreme Court change, lockdowns, preachers going to jail. It kind of looks like the United States might not survive. And Christians are saying to me, so this must be the end of the world, right? I mean, if the U.S. collapses, how would Christianity survive? It is the end of the world as we know it, Walker, right? Kind of like the disciples, it seems we think that if this thing that we put our hope in ends, then everything has to end. But Jesus predicted that all that kind of stuff that we just mentioned is normal life, including persecution. I mean, for sure, if we start to be actually persecuted in America, that has to be the last straw, right? But Timothy Gettert says, Mark's theology of the advancing kingdom is like a relay race in which persecution for the sake of the gospel is the baton passed on from each runner to the next as they round the track. Or to stick closer to Mark's theology, imagery, he says, it's the cross that's passed from shoulder to shoulder, from John the Baptist to Jesus, from Jesus to his disciples, from his disciples to us. He says, we're the last leg of the race. We don't know if we're running the last leg or not. It makes no difference in how we run. Running requires giving our all. Jesus says, those things are not the signs of the end. Those are just normal for followers. So, could God restore our country to sanity and health and a long and glorious future? Sure. Will he? Maybe, if we ask him and work in that direction, America may last another 1,000 years. But he might not. We might not make it another 1,000 days. Stuff could come apart in the next 1,000 hours. God would still be in charge just as much. Jesus' return would still be just as sure. The Spirit's working would still be just as going on. In fact, maybe more. If America fell, Jesus' first disciples could not imagine a God-controlled world where the temple was not shining on the hill. And some Christians seem incapable of imagining a God-controlled world where our flag is not flying. But folks, our hope is not in the United States of America, as good as that's been for us. Our hope rests squarely and solely on the promised return and reign of Jesus Christ. Point number two. Therefore, we have to help people get ready. We have to love people enough to tell them the truth. We really have to help people understand and act on what Jesus is shouting here. I had a friend whom I desperately wanted to go to heaven with me. He is a good guy in every way. He loves his family. He works hard at his job. He's good at his job. He treats all people with respect. He's influential. He's funny. He's athletic. He's just a good guy doing life like God says we're supposed to do life, but he has no connection to Jesus whatsoever. So one day at lunch, we're talking about why he lives like he lives and why I live like I live. And I said, well, I do what I do because I owe Jesus. I owe him. And my friend shrugged his shoulders and said, okay, Walker, I'll bite. Why do you owe Jesus? And as carefully and persuasively as I could, I explained how all of us choose to go off course, and that wrecks us. And when things get wrecked, to get back to good, somebody has to pay. Whether that's a cracked window or a broken bone or a smashed up car or a betrayed trust, if something gets wrecked in our lives, somebody's going to have to eat the hurt to make that right. And how we're all broken. And either we will pay to fix that or Jesus will, because somebody has to pay to fix that. So I asked Jesus to do that for me, and he said he would, so I owe him my life. I explained all that. I said, until he shows up again, I just try to say thank you to him by living my life under his mentorship. And my buddy across the table just stared at me, and I could tell I had not done well. And he said, so a guy 2,000 years ago halfway around the world that I've never seen died for me because he loves me. And he currently lives somewhere, but he's going to show up in the sky someday soon, and he wants me to go with him. That's your story? And I looked at him, and I tried to see it from where he was sitting. And I said, it's kind of crazy, huh? And he said, thank you very much. I just wanted somebody to admit that it's bizarre. And I said, but what if it's true? And he thought for a moment, and then he said, well, that would matter. And I said, thank you very much. Because if it's true, if Jesus is coming again, if he's about to show up shortly, that matters. And I am contractually obligated at this point to say, and I am delighted to be able to do so, everything Jesus has ever said would happen, happened just like he said it would. Except for one thing, when he said, first the temple is going to get knocked down, then I'm coming back. And part of what he said has already happened. And it's so important that our family and our friends and our coworkers and our neighbors understand what Jesus is saying. Because if you don't understand what's being offered, it might not turn out well. Did you hear about Jose Rivera? Jose Rivera was a notorious bandit in southern Texas, robbing stagecoaches and banks. But finally, the posse tracked his hideout down to a small town in Mexico. And the posse walked into the saloon in that town, and the leader of the posse approached a young man sitting in the bar, and he said, we're on a mission to bring back Jose Rivera, dead or alive. Could you help us find him? And the guy sitting at the bar pointed over to a table where a fat man was leaning back in his chair snoring, and he said, that's Jose Rivera. So the posse went over and woke up the sleeping man. They said, are you Jose Rivera? And the man smiled and said, no, speak English. So the leader asked the young man at the bar to come over and interpret for them. And he did. And the leader of the posse said, Jose Rivera, you've got two choices. Either you can tell us where you hid all the money that you have stolen from us, and you can walk away a free man, or we're going to shoot you dead where you sit. And the young man listened to all that, and he translated that into Spanish for Jose. And Jose answered in Spanish. He said, all right, all right, all right. I understand. Don't shoot me. He said, I will tell you everything. You go on this road 1 mile south. You find a well. You see a big tree 50 yards away from the well. And behind the tree is a concrete slab. And I buried all your money under that tree. under that slab. And the young interpreter listened to all that and turned to the posse and he said, Jose Rivera is a very brave man, and he said he'd rather die than tell you where he put the money. Silly, but in real life, knowing what is being said, what is being offered, matters. One more thing about the Redan and Tebbe I didn't tell you. When the 103 people got out alive, as successful as that rescue attempt was, three hostages in the airport that day lost their lives. When the commandos stormed the terminal and yelled, "Get down," two of the Jewish hostages hesitated, trying to figure out what was going on, and they were also cut down by the bullets meant for their kidnappers. One young man had been on the floor when the soldiers arrived, and in the confusion, he stood up and he too was gunned down with the enemy combatants. Had those three people understood and heeded the soldiers' warnings, they would have walked out of that airport alive. Mark's Gospel, page 13, is where Jesus yells, "Get down." Those who hear and understand, who obey what Jesus is saying, we will walk out of this life alive and well. Please walk with us.